Welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, December 10th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. We'll be reading today from both the Saturday, December 9th version and today's December 10th version. We'll start with the five-day forecast for the Siouxland area. Today is going to be partly sunny with a high of 41 and a low of 19. Monday is going to be sunny and mild with a high of 47 and a low of 25. Tuesday will be colder with clouds and sun, a high of 36 and a low of 18. Wednesday will be partly sunny and will be milder. It will be a high of 47 and a low of 28. Then on Thursday, it will be mild again with a high of 49 and a low of 34. Our first story from the front page is about Sioux City's Goodwill of the Great Plains, and they're celebrating the century. And this article today is written by Mason Doctor of the Sioux City Journal. In 1923, the Reverend John Perry Hantla made the long journey to Boston. Hantla, a minister at the Wall Street Mission in Sioux City, was on a mission of his own to learn more about the Goodwill Movement. The Goodwill Movement had been founded 21 years earlier by the Reverend Edgar James Helms, a Methodist minister who had grown up near Spirit Lake, Iowa. In Boston, Helms encountered down-on-their-luck segments of the population and immigrants who needed help. The movement he founded was a self-sustaining system to improve the lives of the needy, funded by a now-familiar He began going around with burlap sacks, collecting household items that were no longer in use. They would, at that time, repair those items and stitch clothing and make sure furniture was in good condition, said Bridget Solomon, CEO of Goodwill of the Great Plains, which Hantla founded. And then they would sell it. Those sales then paid the wages for the people working in the organization. So John Perry Hantla went out and studied under Helms and brought that idea back to Sioux City. And that became Goodwill, said John Philip Hantla, grandson of John Perry Hantla, and the third John P. Hantla to lead the organization until his retirement in January of 2022. Goodwill of the Great Plains is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year. The Sioux City-based nonprofit, with a sprawling multi-state territory, helped more than 30,000 people last year, a historic high, and it is in an expansionary phase. After the pandemic, there's been a huge need for some of the basic services that we provide, Solomon said. The organization is building a $10 million adult day habitation center across the street from its main offices and store at 3100 West 4th Street, and its 22nd store in Vermilion, South Dakota, is expected to open early next year. And then we have plans to continue to grow into some other communities in the future, Solomon added. The Wall Street Mission, founded in 1890, began as a church in the South Bottoms, a working-class neighborhood nestled along the Floyd River before the river was rerouted. Despite the name, the Wall Street Mission did not serve a wealthy population. It ministered to a multi-ethnic neighborhood that worked mostly in the Sioux City stockyards, whose homes were flooded periodically due to the vagaries of the old Floyd River. That whole area in South Sioux City history was called the South Bottoms, and that really was a melting pot, Solomon said. People that were coming all over the world, immigrating to the Sioux City area. I actually have personal ties there. My grandfather grew up in the South Bottoms. He actually grew up next to the Hantla family. John Perry Hantla, a World War I veteran born in Maxville, Kansas, came to Sioux City in 1919 to study at Morningside College. While he was still in college, he became the superintendent of the Wall Street Mission. After his return from Boston, Hantla vastly expanded the services offered by the Wall Street Mission. In those days, they didn't have nearly the social safety nets that they have now, John Philip Hantla said. If you became disabled and could not work, there really wasn't much for you, he added. And so your support, if you're going to get any, came from the local community. The Wall Street Mission name was retained for decades, later as Wall Street Mission Goodwill Industries. Eventually, the Wall Street Mission name was retired in favor of Goodwill. As we grew, we found that our name, Wall Street Mission, wasn't relevant to people outside of Sioux City, John Philip Hantla said. A lot of people in Sioux City know the Wall Street Mission and the history and the South Bottoms of Sioux City, But when you go up to Sioux Falls or to Mason City, it doesn't resonate with them. A decade after John Perry Hantla brought the ideas of goodwill to Sioux City, the Great Depression put a severe strain on social services. During the month of December 1931, the Wall Street Mission gave food, work, and clothing to more than 800 men, according to a contemporary journal report. By February 1932, that number had ballooned to more than 3,000. A year later, Hantla reported the mission was serving between 800 and 900 meals per day. In the spring of 1933, the soup kitchen operated by the Wall Street Mission, which had served about 170,000 meals during the preceding year, was being threatened with eviction. Hantla issued a dire warning to find a way to keep the kitchen open. Unaddressed hunger, he said, would likely breed crime, widespread begging, and disorder. Unless a kitchen is maintained, it will be necessary to turn 500 men out on the Sioux City streets to beg, Hantla said in May of 1933. If we cannot provide these men with food and shelter, they will be driven to begging. 2 months later, on July 20, 1933, hundreds of recipients of meals at the Wall Street Mission, who were required to work 6 hours a day in the mission's kitchens and gardens for their meals, in keeping with the longstanding policy of a hand up, not a hand out, went on strike. The brief work stoppage began in the morning and was apparently resolved by noon with an agreement hammered out by Hantla and one of the strike leaders, according to a journal article. In the early 1940s, Hantla organized the Shoe and Mitten Party, Goodwill's longstanding annual giveaway of shoes, mittens, hats, and stockings for children. The program has grown significantly over time. The first Shoe and Mitten Party outfitted 105 children. 4 years later, 215 children received shoes and mittens. Today, Goodwill of the Great Plains hosts shoe and mitten partners in 17 communities. In 2022, more than 2,800 children received shoes and mittens. This year's Shoe and Mitten Party will be from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at Goodwill, 3100 West 4th Street. John Perry Hantla remained with the Wall Street Mission until his retirement in 1959, though he would emerge to help years later when the organization found itself in need. His son, John Paul, took over as superintendent after the elders Hantla's retirement. John Philip joined the organization in 1981 and became CEO upon the retirement of John Paul in June 1996. After the retirement of John Philip Hantla, Solomon became the first person not named John P. Hantla to lead the organization. Today, the fourth generation Hantla, John Philip Hantla's son Dave, works in Goodwill of the Great Plains e-commerce operations. The old Wall Street Mission Goodwill Industries building at 312 Street, South Wall Street, was destroyed by fire on March 27, 1973. By then, the South Bottoms had been largely erased by the rerouting of the Floyd River, urban renewal, and the construction of Interstate 29. Goodwill's board decided to leave Wall Street permanently. We had more than 100 people on the payroll who were instantly unemployed, the late John Paul Hantla recalled of the fire in 1996. I remember being there that morning when a taxi drove up and one of our employees who was in a wheelchair arrived. She took one look and tears came to her eyes. She says, "I don't have a job anymore." John Paul Hantla decided to keep everyone on the payroll while the organization wrangled with plans for a new building that took several years to come together. The price tag for the new building came to $1.75 million, and John Perry Hantla, by then ill with cancer, had to rally supporters to the expensive project. He reportedly told them, "Men, we've got to have faith. If we put up a fence, God will provide the paint." In 1976, Goodwill opened its current headquarters at 3100 West 4th Street. The 83-year-old John Perry Hantla, in a wheelchair, was in attendance at the ribbon cutting. At the time, Goodwill of the Great Plains, as the organization is now known, employed more than 225 people, but 90% of whom were disabled. Today, Goodwill of the Great Plains employs nearly 560 people across its vast territory, which includes the entirety of South Dakota and portions of Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota. The nonprofit has expanded its South Dakota footprint aggressively in recent years and has opened a number of job centers. It was about 2011 or so that we were doing some strategic planning and we made a conscious decision to grow our footprint across and serve our entire territory, John Philip Hantla said. Because there was a lot of people in that area that were not getting the services that we can provide. During this period, when the organization took the name of Goodwill of the Great Plains, it took on board members farther afield, from Rapid City and Sioux Falls. So we're no longer a Sioux City-centric organization. We are now a regional organization, Hantla said. We're still very much about putting people to work, Solomon said. So our retail stores are our funding mechanism, but it also allows us to provide jobs to lots and lots of people. Goodwill's new, roughly $10 million, 23,645 square foot adult day habilitation center on West 4th Street will also house their job center as well as a gym. It is expected to be ready by the end of 2024. Goodwill's adult day services program serves about 75 people with disabilities and or medical or mental health conditions per week, Solomon said. So it's a safe, caring, engaging environment for folks to come and spend their day, Solomon said of the program. Oftentimes, individuals have disabilities. It could be a mental disability, a physical diagnosis. It could be a mental health diagnosis, Alzheimer's, dementia. It's a real wide variety of individuals that may be a good fit for services with Goodwill. And our next story is headlined, The 2023 Little Yellow Dog Fetches $13,000. And the auction raises funds for the journal's Goodfellows Charities. And this is an article by Peggy Cenzarino of the journal. Nestled in the arms of his new owner, Nixon, the 2023 Little Yellow Dog seemed right at home. The black and white Bern Doodle puppy fetched $13,000 in Saturday's Little Yellow Dog auction held in the atrium of the Ho-Chunk Center. The winning bidders were Rick Grenko and his wife Lynette Meyer of Sioux City. I wasn't 100% sure until this morning I was probably going to try and buy the dog, Grenko said. We went upstairs and had our cocktails before the auction, and he came right over and sniffed me, and I thought he must be meant for me. Nixon was donated by Pat and Karen Kuhl and named after the late Dave Nixon Sr., a longtime Sioux City TV news anchor and Little Yellow Dog auction MC. The auction, held by the Ancient and Effervescent Order of the Little Yellow Dogs, raises funds for the Sioux City Journal's Goodfellow Charities. I could not be more honored, honestly, to have ended up with this dog in honor of Mr. Nixon and everything he did for this organization, Grenko said. It really is a privilege to win this auction and have this dog named after him. Asked if he would keep the dog's name, Grenko said, I think so, because it's in honor of Mr. Nixon. Perhaps if it was something else, I might do something else. But given the significance, I assume we will keep the name. Representing the family, Nixon's three children, Dave Jr., Rick, and Leslie, made the formal opening bid of $2,000 at the 2023 auction. Dave Nixon Jr. said the auction was an event his father never missed wherever he was at that time of the year. He would always share the stories. Thank you for all you've done for our family and Merry Christmas, Nixon Jr. said. The bid grew to $5,250 when auctioneer Bruce Brock took a break for some holiday music from the All-America Concert Band. After the short pause, the bidding climbed by another $1,750 when it was held so Carrie Johnson of Family Pet Hospital, who serves as vice president of the Ancient and Effervescent Order of the Little Yellow Dogs, could take Nixon through the large crowd on the atrium floor and mezzanine to the delight of the crowd. By 12:50 p.m., the bid was at $10,400, as the bidding seemed to be concentrated between two bidders. The bid climbed to $11,700, then $12,000, then $13,000. I didn't know if I would win or not, Grenko said. I kind of resolved I wanted to buy this dog because it's so cute. The cause is so fabulous, to provide toys for children. The dog seemed to almost fall asleep as Grenko answered questions from the media after placing the winning bid. He doesn't seem too upset, does he? He was running around upstairs like crazy, so this is about what you would expect. Nixon will be an only dog in his new home. I've had dogs before, Grenko said. We travel a lot, so I was always a little concerned about getting a dog. Friends who have excessive numbers of pets all said, we'll babysit that dog anytime you want. So now the travel excuse went out the window, so I was running out of excuses. It's such a cute dog. It's not going to be very big. Everything I've read about them is such a great breed and it's a great dog. It will be spoiled. Started by a journal reporter in 1914, Goodfellow Charities is one of Siouxland's oldest charities. This is one of the signature events in our Siouxland community, said 2023 MC Chris McGowan, Siouxland Chamber of Commerce president. Goodfellows has been around for over 100 years, and the Little Yellow Dog Auction is approaching a century itself, so I am happy to be back and thanks for the opportunity. Skippy, the first dog auctioned by the Yellow Dog Auction Club, was sold for $25, a sizable amount back in 1936. Last year, Caddy, a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier, fetched $12,200. Our next story is an update on the missing Wall Lake man, David Schultz. The Sac County Sheriff's Office gave its first update in more than a week on Wall Lake, Iowa resident David Schultz, who was reported missing on November 21st. Saturday morning, Sac County Sheriff Ken McClure said in a release that the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation has assisted with a forensic search of David Schultz's phone and confirmed he has not legally gone through a U.S. border crossing and is still missing. McClure said the last time Schultz was seen was on a Highway Department of Transportation camera on Highway 20 west of MM-126 truck stop heading west. According to McClure, Schultz, a 53-year-old married truck driver and father of two, had his vehicle called in by a Sac County Secondary Road employee at 3:04 p.m. on November 21st after it was discovered parked on the traveled portion of the road at the intersection of D-15 and N-14. It was reported that the semi had been sitting there since early morning. Responding deputies determined that it was David Schultz's. The semi was shut off, and inside deputies found David Schultz's wallet and cell phone, McClure said. David Schultz's driver's license was in the wallet. Investigators would later learn that nothing was missing from the wallet. Following the discovery, McClure said county investigators searched the area on foot and with a canine, and requested assistance from the Iowa State Patrol Air Wing Unit. A State Patrol pilot flew the surrounding area and did not detect a heat signature that would be consistent with a person, McClure said. For the next 2 days, law enforcement, area firefighters, and volunteers expanded the ground search on foot and with the use of drones. Nothing of significant value was located. To further the search, McClure said Sac County Sheriff's Detectives and Lakeview Police traveled to the Eagle Grove area in Wright County, and with the help from the Wright County Sheriff's Office, found the hog confinement Schultz was supposed to load up from. Load crew members were interviewed and load records were obtained, McClure said. Investigators learned that Schultz had picked up his load, but had been late to arrive and he was the last truck loaded. Schultz left at about 10:50 p.m. At some point in Schultz's journey, McClure said cell phone data shows Schultz driving to the intersection of Highway 20 and Highway 71 Junction. That was not a usable video from the DOT camera at Highway 4 and Highway 20, and there is no video of Schultz stopping at the truck stop at Highway 4, McClure said. Cell phone data shows Schultz's phone arrives at Highway 20 and 71 at about 12:18 a.m. The data shows the phone traveling north to where the truck was found. Data suggests the truck may have been there since 12:40 a.m. on November 21, 2023. Investigators obtained video surveillance, per McClure, from an area business near Wickman Hog Buying Station, McClure said. This video shows that David Schultz never made it to the Wickmans. Law enforcement has searched for additional video footage from Eagle Grove to Fort Dodge, but has not located any. Since Schultz's disappearance, the United Cajun Army Navy, a Louisiana-based nonprofit, and volunteers have scoured more than 100,000 acres in and around Sac County. In addition to Sac County, Lakeview, Iowa, DCI, and Wright County law enforcement officials, the Iowa State Patrol and Minneapolis police have helped look for Schultz. Schultz's wife, Sarah, has repeatedly called the disappearance suspicious and said this is not something David would do. He would never leave. His family is his life. Sarah Schultz last saw her husband at about 7:30 p.m. Monday, November 20th. She said David had been working all day and asked her to grab him a change of clothes. He had to do another seaboard load from Eagle Grove to Sac City, she said. He just washed up and changed, gave me a kiss, and ran out the door. He's always in a hurry. Sarah Schultz said David was eager to get his work done and come back home, since his daughter and grandson were visiting from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. On Tuesday morning, Schultz found the man whom David hauls livestock for on her doorstep. He said, "Have you spoken to Dave?" Schultz recalled. "I said no." He said, "No one can get a hold of him and the pigs have not been dropped off yet." McClure said anyone with any information is asked to contact the Sac County Sheriff's Office at 712-662-7127 or their local law enforcement agency. Siouxland Humane Society to host open house. As a way to say thank you to supporters, the Siouxland Humane Society is holding its annual Christmas open house and bake sale from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday and noon to 4 p.m. Sunday at 1015 Triview Avenue. Fudge, pies, cakes, cookies, oh my, there's a little something for everyone, said volunteer manager Kelly Erie. If you are someone who doesn't like doing holiday baking, you don't want to pass up this opportunity to pick yourself up a sweet treat. By doing so, you are helping a four-legged sweetie, she said. Specifically, the Humane Society is asking for donated supplies to help fill their kennel, things like paper towels, cat or dog food, cat litter, pet treats, and toys will be accepted. Ari said anyone who brings in an item will have their name placed in a raffle for a special prize. Established in 1889, the Siouxland Humane Society is Siouxland's only open admission full-service shelter, caring for thousands of pets each year. The SCH Fund finds forever homes for 100% of its adoptable pets. For more information, contact Siouxland Humane Society organization or call 712-252-2614. The RE/MAX City Center is showing holiday movies in the theater. Santa and the Grinch have visited downtown Sioux City the last few weeks to watch some holiday classic movies while visiting with attendees. The RE/MAX City Center has been hosting a series of Christmas movies on Sundays in the remodeled Riviera Theater. Holiday characters such as Santa and the Grinch have been visiting to take photos with attendees. Jeff Carlson said Christmas is the best time of the year for him and his family, so they wanted to create a series that brings the community together in the downtown area. With popcorn, hot chocolate, holiday-themed drinks, holiday music, and pictures with Santa, the RE/MAX City Center is creating a Christmas Day environment each weekend. Carlson said the events are an affordable way for families to see holiday movies and celebrate the Christmas season. It's not just about coming to the movie, it's about experiencing it together, he said. The series was created from a partnership between RE/MAX Experience, Jensen Subaru, and For Siouxland. Every Sunday, beginning November 26th through the Sunday before Christmas, December 17th, the remodeled Riviera Theater is showing a holiday movie such as The Grinch, Elf, Home Alone, and It's a Wonderful Life. Doors open at 1 p.m. to give time for snacks and photos before the movie starts at 1:30. Tickets are $3 and include popcorn and water. Other treats are available for purchase. The partnership with Jensen Subaru allows the events to be affordable for families, Carlson said. A portion of the proceeds also go to nonprofits in Sioux City. What an awesome combination, he said. Being able to create events that the community can enjoy, that they can come together and have a blast, but also impact nonprofits in our city. The first day of the event, showing The Grinch, sold out with more than 200 people in attendance. Carlson said the showing of Elf was close to 200 as well. The series will also include a sensory-friendly showing of Home Alone at 4 p.m. this Sunday, that's today. The event will have dimmed theater lights instead of it being completely dark. The movie volume will be lower. Audience members are welcome to move around, and fidgets and noise-canceling headphones will be provided. The event is in partnership with Unlimited, a Sunnybrook church group designed to provide support for individuals with special needs. Other upcoming showings include 1:30 p.m. today, a Home Alone, and then 4 p.m. on Sunday is a sensory-friendly Home Alone. 1:30 p.m. on December 17th is Elf, and at 3:45 on December 17th, It's a Wonderful Life. Carlson hopes to hold the movie series every year and have the RE/MAX City Center become a downtown Christmas center. And our next story is the Sioux City Public Schools Foundation's Winter Wear Drive warms holidays for students. The Sioux City Community School District student population is very diverse, with more than 47 different home languages being spoken. Karen Harrison, Director of Development of the Sioux City Public Schools Foundation, said many students arrive in the district from warm climates and are not dressed for cold winter weather. They hear they're coming to Iowa, but they have no idea what the Iowa weather is like. Can you imagine coming from somewhere like maybe Mexico or Africa? Harrison said. The Sioux City Public School Foundation's annual cold weather clothing campaign encourages Siouxlanders to help close the gap. And that's clothes, C-L-O-T-H-E-S, the gap, for families who have experienced some setbacks, are on free and reduced lunches, or have immigrated to the area by donating new winter wear. On average, 70% of the district's 15,000 students and their families are in need of some assistance. Last year, we did have quite a few apartment fires, which displaced a lot of families, and some of those families lost everything, Harrison said. With our clothing closet that we have, we were able to help get clothes to those families that were in need immediately through our equity department and through our counselors or school staff. Coats, hats, gloves, mittens, boots, sweaters, and long pants are being collected for toddlers, youth, and teens. The clothing can be dropped off at the district school buildings or the Sioux City Public Schools Foundation office at 627 4th Street. Personal care hygiene items and laundry detergent are also being accepted, along with monetary donations, which will be used to purchase needed items. Harrison said the clothing drive has been going since roughly 2018 and is part of the equity pillar that the foundation assists with. These are adult problems kids should not have to worry about, she said. But Maslow's hierarchy of needs is making sure those basic needs are met so they can concentrate on their education. Harrison said the drive is usually quite successful. Last year, she said the campaign brought in three $1,000 donations. When the need for coats is exhausted, she said any leftover money supports the purchase of caps and gowns for graduating seniors or free period products for students. This year, Harrison said there is a special need for adult-sized clothing for high school students. There's always a need, and my high schools told me that's something they're really lacking. They hang up the coats by the entrance, and then the kids can nonchalantly just walk up and grab what they need. City announces Outer Drive eastbound lane closure. The eastbound lane of Outer Drive at 28th Street will temporarily close next week. The Sioux City Engineering Division said in a statement that the lane closure will begin Monday morning to allow city crews to make street repairs. The work is expected to be completed on Wednesday. While alternating traffic will be maintained, other routes will be available, the statement said. Motorists are advised to reduce speed, drive cautiously, and obey all traffic control signs with regards to this closure. And then the first phase of Plywood Trail nearing completion. The first phase of a 16-mile trail that will run through rural Plymouth and Woodbury counties is nearing completion. Paving of the Plywood Trail from Merrill to Lamar's is almost finished, according to a statement from the Plywood Trail Foundation. This section of the trail includes two water crossings and one major bridge structure. While we were hoping the paving would be completed in early fall, we are extremely excited that it is close to completion, said Ryan Schopp, executive director of the Plywood Trail Foundation. There are a few driveways and handwork locations that still need to be completed, and we anticipate these will be finished in the next few weeks as weather allows. The statement said the first phase of the trail is not rideable, as substantial completion will not be issued until spring 2024 due to the lack of backfill and seating around the trail. The Plywood Trail Foundation intends to hold a ribbon cutting for the trail in the spring. The statement said design work for the third phase of the project, Hinton to Sioux City, is also nearing completion. The City of Sioux City is coordinating with utility companies and working to obtain all necessary permits for the trail. April 2024 is being targeted as the letting date, with construction staged between 2024 and 2025. Next year, the foundation plans to begin fundraising and applying for grants for the second phase of the project, Merrill to Hinton. Named after the two counties it connects, the Plymouth and Woodbury County's trail will run parallel with Highway 75. The trail, which is estimated to cost $18 million, will provide a transportation link for cyclists and pedestrians alike. It will be the largest trail on the western side of Iowa. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, December 10th on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. We'll now turn to the obituaries. George Leo Witkop, Remsen, Iowa, 91, passed away December 6th. Memorial Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, December 12th at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Remsen. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday at Fish Funeral Home and Monument in Remsen. Services entrusted to Fish Funeral Home and Monument in Remsen. Nancy J. Salaris, 88, died Thursday, December 7th, with her family by her side. Services will be at 10:30 a.m. on December 13th at Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, with Father Sava Leda officiating. Luncheon will follow service, and burial will follow at luncheon at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be 6 p.m. Tuesday, December 12th, with Trisagion service at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Nancy was born November 10, 1935, in Velvando, Greece, the daughter of John and Anna Dimitroulis. She married Orestes Celerius on January 19, 1964, in the village of Velvando. In March of 1964, they moved to City Island, New York, where they owned the Island Diner. The couple moved to Sioux City in 1973, where they owned the Copper Kettle. She was a devoted member of the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church of Sioux City, involved in the Philotapkus, and proud to be part of the church choir. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church Choir. Russell E. Greenlee, 92, of Anthon, passed away on Sunday, December 3rd. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 11th at the United Methodist Church of Anthon. Visitation will be held from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, December 10th. Prayer service at 4 p.m. at the United Methodist Church of Anthon. Arrangements are by Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home of Anthon. Pauline Ruth Sneller, 89, of Sioux City, daughter of Earl and Ethel Atkins, passed away Tuesday, November 28th, peacefully in her sleep. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, December 15th, at the Grace United Methodist Church, with Reverend John Christensen officiating. A reception will be held in the Fellowship Hall following the services. Burial will follow at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Sioux City. Pauline was born in Kansas City, Missouri, on January 21, 1934. At the age of 9, she and her family moved to Pella, Iowa, where she attended Pella High. Pauline worked as a secretary for the Pella City Clerk and was selected to ride on the city office float for the annual Tulip Festival. During the Tulip Festival dance, she met the love of her life, Vernon Sneller. Both dressed in traditional Dutch attire and danced in wooden shoes. They married 4 years later on August 10, 1957, in Pella. Pauline and Vern were together from then on and celebrated their 67th wedding anniversary on August 10, 2023. After marriage, they lived in Pella, Woodward, Lamars, and Sioux City. Pauline and Vern raised 5 children, Leanne, Tim, Ron, Lisa, and Michael. They were both active in their church. Pauline enjoyed participating in the choir, handbell choir, and women's Bible study at Grace United Methodist Church in Sioux City. Pauline and Vern also enjoyed square dancing and were committee members for their group called Skirts and Flirts. For a short time, they also ran a small business aptly named VP Enterprise. A devoted mother and loving spouse, Pauline enjoyed beading, playing the piano, and music of any form. One of Pauline's proudest achievements was heading up the Grace United Methodist Church Outreach Commission refugee program, helping relocate 5 families from Vietnam and Cambodia. In 1989, Pauline was awarded the Individual Governor's Volunteer Award for providing outstanding volunteer service presented by Governor Terry Branstad at the Governor's Annual Volunteer Recognition Ceremony. In lieu of flowers or memorials, please send a donation to Christ United Methodist Church Food Bank, 1735 Morningside Avenue in Sioux City. Online condolences may be offered to the family at MeyerBrosChapels.com. Akberta Couch, 99, Mason City, formerly of Ida Grove, passed away December 5th. Funeral services are 10:30 a.m. Monday, December 11th, with visitation from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Monday at St. Paul Lutheran Church of Ida Grove. Arrangements by Christensen Van Houten Funeral Home of Ida Grove. David Lester, 71, of Sioux City, passed away Monday, December 4th. Gravesite services at 1 p.m. on December 14th at Dakota Cemetery. Arrangements with Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Jeff Lamming, 62, of Sioux City, passed away Monday, November 20th. A celebration of life will be held 2 p.m. December 9th, this was yesterday, at the Crystal Court Community Building. Waterbury Funeral Service is assisting with the arrangements. Doreen Ann Miller, 91, of Ida Grove, passed December 6th. A memorial services will be held at 10:30 a.m. December 13th at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Ida Grove. Interment will be at the Ida Grove Cemetery. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. December 12th at St. Paul Lutheran Church. Arrangements by Christensen Van Houten Funeral Home of Ida Grove. Rose Ann Tice, 97, of Sioux City, died December 6th in Sioux City. Mass is 10 a.m. on Monday, December 11th at the Church of the Nativity. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will be at St. Mary's Cemetery in Mapleton, Iowa, at 12 p.m. Arrangements are through Christy Smith Morningside Chapel, Sioux City. Mary Louise Hansen, 92, of Sioux City, passed away December 7th. Christy Smith Funeral Homes Morningside Chapel is handling the arrangements. Ronald Lee Rasmussen, 63, of Emerson, Nebraska, passed away Tuesday, December 5th at the Pender, Nebraska Hospital. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 11:30 a.m. Monday, December 11th at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Jackson, Nebraska. Visitation with the family present will be from 10 a.m. until Mass time. Burial will be at the Memorial Park Cemetery. Ronnie was born March 27, 1960 in Sioux City, the son of Axel and Mary Rose Rasmussen. He attended New Hope School, where he met his lifelong best friend of 52 years, Steve Bartles. Ronnie was forever a prankster, and his mischievous nature and jokes were contagious. He loved Christmas and all the Christmas displays, lights, and celebrations. His favorite meal was a Hardee's roast beef and Dr. Pepper. He was a Johnny Cash fan and an avid Hee-Haw fan. Everything in Ronnie's life had to be perfect, and the world would stop until Ronnie was satisfied. He was incredibly strong in substance and character, a huge presence in every life he touched. Phyllis J. Schrader, 85, of South Sioux City, passed away Tuesday, December 5th. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, December 16th at the Salem Lutheran Church in South Sioux City. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the church. And that's it for the obituaries. We'll now move to the opinion page, and we'll first read the journal editorial or opinion piece, and it is written by the Journal Editorial Board. The Journal's editorial board's long-standing practice of sitting down with presidential candidates returned with a meeting Friday with Nikki Haley. The former United Nations ambassador and South Carolina governor is the first of what we hope will be a full slate of interviews before the Iowa caucuses. Our goal, of course, is simple. We want to ask the questions you'd ask, get away from the sound bites and the caucus stage attacks, and find out where the candidates stand on issues that are important to Siouxlanders. As absurd as it may seem, interviewing presidential candidates is a long-standing one for us. The Journal has had sit-downs for decades, and often our editors and reporters have gotten a different take on the people aiming for the top job. Watching them operate has been highly informative, from the candidates who shake every hand in their path to those who enter through a back door. The candidates frequently sized up the competition, and in one case, Bernie Sanders, in case you're wondering, predicted what the outcome would be. This year is no different. With so many takes on everything from immigration to taxes, we want to provide a clear look at who stands where. We hope all the candidates accept our invitation and join us for a 30-minute chat. In exchange, we will provide readers an unedited video of the editorial board meeting so they too can get a better look at who's running. Political reporter Jared McNett has been following the candidates since they first announced for 2024. He joined editorial board members Bruce Miller, Dave Driesen, and Tim Hines to reflect what you've been saying on those many campaign visits. While the run-up to the nomination may seem long, it's an important step to getting the right person in office. We hope you will watch the videos and provide your own reactions. We also hope that you exercise your most important privilege and, when the time comes, vote. The Nikki Haley video will be available at thesiouxcityjournal.com beginning on Tuesday. And now we move to the letters to the editor. And our first one is from State Representative Jacob Bossman of Sioux City. And he writes, "I have always believed governors make the best presidents. We need someone in the White House who has built coalitions to solve problems for their constituents. That's why I'm excited to endorse Nikki Haley. We need a president who will keep the American people top of mind. Joe Biden does not seem to care about the out-of-control inflation. He's out of touch with the pinch Americans feel at the pump and at the grocery store. It's time we have a leader in office who knows what it's like to be one of us. I believe Nikki Haley is that leader. She grew up in rural South Carolina and helped her parents run a family business. During that time, she learned the value of a dollar. When Nikki became governor, she did not forget that truth. That's why she cut taxes and partnered with South Carolina farmers to usher in double-digit growth in their farm economy. Now, as a presidential candidate, she has proven she will stand up for us in the White House. From fighting to curb inflation to expanding access to biofuels, Nikki Haley is a leader who will not forget about us in Washington." And again, this was written by State Representative Jacob Bossman. Now, our next letter to the editor is written by Donald C. Parsons from Sioux City. And Donald writes, "A letter to the editor published in the Journal on December 2nd illustrated that Republicans that support Donald Trump have replaced honesty and morality with normative and informational social influences. These types of social influences are best seen in the Hans Christian Andersen fable, The Emperor's New Clothes. Unfortunately, the author of the letter leaves us no alternative than to believe that although he can clearly see that Donald Trump wears no clothes, he believes that Joe Biden is dressed in the finest garments that only those in the Democratic Party can see. Should I, like him, number the criminality that is accepted by Joe Biden's supporters? 1. What were the goods and services that Beau and James Biden provided to the Ukraine and China? 2. How can the riots over George Floyd's death be acceptable when innocents lost their businesses and homes? 3. Why don't criminals fear punishment when they commit crimes and democratically run cities? 4. When pro-Palestinian protesters shout from the river to the sea, what happens to the Jews who occupy that land presently? 5. When did schools stop teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic? 6. With a president so intent on the fair distribution of wealth, who gets the blame when inflation eats up any gains achieved? Informational social influence is when you turn to the members of one's group to obtain accurate information. Normative influence is when someone conforms to be liked or accepted by group members. As children, we laughed at the story, The Emperor's New Clothes, not knowing that it would become the story of the United States in 2023. And again, this letter was written by Donald C. Parsons of Sioux City. And we now have an article from one of the journal regulars. And today is from Cherise Yanni of Sioux City, who is the owner and managing partner of Guarantee Roofing, Siding, and Insulation. She serves on the Siouxland Initiative Executive Committee, the Orpheum Theater Preservation Board, the Orpheum Theater Endowment Board, and the Iowa Department of Transportation Commission. And she writes today, Happy holidays. I am not sure where the time went for the first time in years. I am behind in shopping for the holidays. Some would be stressed to the max. Unfortunately, holidays can be very difficult for many. They may put on an act to appear to be happy and enjoying the time of the year. Watching television advertisements for the holidays or holiday movies, everyone is happy, not a worry in the world. That is so far from the truth for many. Growing up for me and most of the boomers, the holidays were joyous, a time of celebration and being together with family and friends. A survey by Healthline found that a higher number of Gen Z, 65%, were stressed out by the holiday season, a higher number than for millennials or boomers. For some reason, the boomers have the least amount of people that have mental health issues. Hopefully, you know and understand. I am not an expert on this subject, nor do I pretend to be. However, I witness and know people that suffer from some of the issues that involve mental health. The reason I am exploring the illness in this article is because I believe all of us need to be aware and seek help if you need the medical attention or friends or family members need it. Be aware of the people around you and their demeanor. Unfortunately, the holidays trigger issues for many. According to the survey, family drama is one of the top reasons cited, along with finances and struggles with eating and exercise. Grief and the loss of a loved one can intensify during the holidays. Dealing with finances, trauma, anxiety, depression, substance abuse, or other mental health issues, holiday challenges can exacerbate symptoms. Weather can play a part in our moods as well. For instance, shorter days, colder temperatures, darker nights, and gloomy days can make us feel blue. If one suffers from seasonal symptoms, it generally eases with warmer weather and longer days. If this affects you, seeking medical attention is in your best interest. The holiday season can prove to be more difficult for those who have relationships that have gone bad for one reason or another. The images we see on television, movies, programming, or in advertisements can conjure feelings of loneliness, grief, anger, and disappointment. The sooner one seeks medical treatment for mental health problems, the more effective it can be for the individual. For several reasons, young adults are experiencing high rates of anxiety and depression, according to the CDC. Much of it points to the pandemic, climate change anxiety, social and political upheaval worldwide. The CDC's research further discovered that one out of every four young adults ages 18 to 24 have seriously considered suicide in the 30 days prior to their survey. A survey from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, the NAMI, shows the holidays make young people feel lonelier. The Gen Z is nicknamed the loneliest generation, and they are particularly vulnerable to these issues. It's probably not a surprise to most of us that alcohol consumption increases during the holidays. What is alarming to me is that a study tracked the alcohol consumption of 566 young people between 18 and 19. Some were in college, some chose not to go. Researchers found that the number of holiday drinks consumed during the week of New Year's was second only to spring break. The young adults consumed an average of just under 10 drinks during the holiday week, according to the Newport Institute. Besides financial pressures, the American Psychological Association states that 38% of people surveyed said stress increased during the holiday season. They went on to say that some of the reasons besides financial include lack of time, gift giving, and family gatherings. Sometimes one needs to take a break, especially if someone is turning a conversation into a feud. There is nothing wrong with leaving the room, go outside, take a little walk, and get some fresh air. Sunshine and fresh air can help more than one may think. You don't have to be a sports fan to go outside, go for a walk, or hike to get some fresh air and sunlight. It can help relax a person and help one's mood. Enjoy the holidays, do some things for yourself, and remember to relax, exercise if you can. Enjoy the season. If you don't have family in town, get together with some friends for a few hours. And again, this was written by Charisse Yanni, one of the journal's regulars. Our next headline story is Sioux City Man Charged with Sunday Night Murder. Sioux City police have arrested a Sioux City man, charging him with murder that took place Sunday night. Farron Allen Starr, 38, was charged in the fatal shooting of 31-year-old Nathaniel John Parker III. At around 11:58 p.m. Sunday, police responded to a call of shots fired in the 500 block of 9th Street. At the scene, they discovered Parker with a single gunshot wound. He was pronounced dead at the scene. Starr was arrested on the first-degree murder charge without incident on Wednesday. Sioux City Police stopped a vehicle he was in at 7:40 p.m., according to a statement from Community Policing Sergeant Tom Gill. Starr is being held at the Woodbury County Jail in lieu of $1.1 million bond. According to the Woodbury County Attorney's Office, Parker was staying in an upstairs apartment on 9th Street on Sunday when, shortly before midnight, he was fatally shot in the chest. A female witness that had been present in the apartment with Nathaniel Parker III told police that prior to Nathaniel Parker III being shot, someone had knocked at the door to apartment 15 and she heard a male arguing with him about money. Shortly thereafter, the female eyewitness heard a gunshot. After hearing the gunshot, Nathaniel Parker III fell backward, the complaint and affidavit from the Woodbury County Attorney's Office states. In November 2022, Starr pleaded not guilty of stabbing his ex-girlfriend. He is scheduled to stand trial in Woodbury District Court in February 2024 on charges of willful injury, second-degree burglary, going armed with an intent, third offense domestic abuse assault, and two counts of being a felon in possession of a firearm. In March 2014, Starr was sentenced to 2 years in prison for aggravated assault. According to court documents, a bench warrant was filed for Starr on October 25th in connection with the stabbing case. Gill said police were also able to locate Nathaniel Irwin Frazier and Amanda Lynn Hayes, who are described as persons of interest. Frazier, 39, was booked into the Woodbury County Jail on Wednesday. He had two charges for third-degree burglary and a criminal mischief in the second degree. Frazier remains in the Woodbury County Jail with a $20,000 bond. On November 7th, a Woodbury County jury found Parker guilty of assault causing bodily injury for the February 24th death of William Harlan Jr., a Sioux City man who was fatally stabbed in the back seat of a car Parker was riding with him in. In that case, Parker faced a first-degree murder charge, which carries an automatic mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole, but instead was found guilty of the lesser assault charge, which carries a one-year jail sentence. Hours after being released, Parker was booked into the Woodbury County Jail early on November 8th on a charge of public intoxication, a simple misdemeanor. He pleaded guilty and received a one-day suspended sentence. District Judge Jeffrey Neary sentenced Parker to probation for the stabbing on November 21st. Parker received credit for 221 days served in jail while awaiting trial and had a one-year jail sentence on a charge of assault causing bodily injury suspended. For a related drug possession charge, Neary sentenced Parker to 30 days in jail and credited him for time served while placing him on probation for 1 year. We'll now move to Dear Abby. Dear Abby, my husband's parents divorced 50 years ago when he was a newborn. Both remarried within a few years. My husband was raised by his mother and stepdad. His mother and father had little contact after the divorce. Because of that, my husband does not have a close relationship with his biological father, who made little effort to be in his life or the life of our children. Recently, both of my husband's step-parents passed away. After their passing, his mother and father decided to get back together. They told us recently that they plan to remarry. My husband is having a hard time with their reunion. He feels they are rebounding from the death of their spouses. How can he learn to accept a relationship he doesn't agree with but ultimately has no control over? Signed, History Repeats in the South. And the Abby's response. Unless his mother and biological father can resolve the issues that drove them apart in the first place, their remarriage isn't likely to be successful. Suggest to your husband that he withhold judgment until he sees how the reunion works out. If he sees his mother is happy, he must accept that although he and his birth father may never be close, this was her choice. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, December 10th. I'm Dagna, your reader today. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. and thank you for listening.